To see examples of what we talked about on the show, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
But right now I'm just looking at like breakfast recipes, like breakfast pizzas, sandwiches, stuff like that, things that I can cook up, freeze up, and then like, you know, in the morning just kind of like it's almost like making my own Egg McMuffin sandwiches.
Kinda. Yeah, no, I like that, man. That's actually a really good idea. When are you going to make me some?
maybe you want to come over and do a whole meal prep day with me, and you know, we'll spend all day cooking.
You know, I would, okay, but only if we had beer too, which kind of defeats the purpose.
Beer for breakfast.
Okay. All right. So let's do this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with a little bit of direction. I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and tonight we have
Al
and Rook.
Gentlemen, how's it going?
All right.
Did I say what episode this was?
It was 79.
79.
Episode 3.
This is episode 12. Well, like I said, we have a little bit of direction. That's it. So, how you been, guys? It's been about a week since I've talked to you.
Doing all right. Doing all right. How about you guys?
Right on.
I'm always good, man. I'm having a good time. Oh, Ron, in honor of you being on yet again, I decided to class it up once again, but this time I'm going for some beer. So, but
nice. What's drinking? What's drinking tonight? Make me jealous with this health kick I'm on, you son of a bitch. Tell me what beer you're drinking.
It's not just a beer, it is the beer. One of my probably top three favorite beers of all time. It's by Cigar City, a local brewer here in Tampa. And the beer's
Ybor City.
Yeah, that's right, baby. Ybor City. It's called High Ally. It's an IPA, and it is delicious.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Real bitter. If you like Dogfish Head, the 60-minute, then it's a lot like that.
Okay. Actually, last time we went out drinking, we grabbed what was it? Red's strawberry. Which I'm normally highly, highly against the idea of fruit in my beer. I found it actually to be very good. So
it's kind of blasphemous.
it really is, but you know, hey, I'm starting to drink honey with my whiskey, you know.
Ooh, I like the cut of your jib.
Yeah, hey, you know, I'm finding a lot of whiskey flavored or honey flavored whiskeys out there right now. It's apparently a big thing going on. So,
oh my god, that sounds good. This little health kick you're on, you know, we were talking earlier about how we're going to get together, and we should have some honey flavored whiskey with it.
I have some at the house, so come on over.
I love it. So, Al, how's your week been going, man? Besides you and Don doing an episode. Not long ago.
Yeah, we did. We did a Don and Al show on Saturday. That was a lot of fun. You'll be hearing that one soon. So besides that, everything's cool. Been reading some stuff. But actually, I want to hear about. I'm interested in what you've been doing, Dallas.
Okay, well, I got a big thing that I've been super excited about. Actually, before I go into that though, because that's going to take a little while. I did want to touch on one thing today. I made a donation.
Okay, we're all friends here. You can come out. You can tell us.
It's the sweets. I made a donation today to an organization. They've been around for a long time, and I've heard about them for years. And I've always heard about it, but I was never kind of proactive until today. But it's an organization called the Heroes Initiative.
Oh, yeah.
And here, I'll read just this quick blurb off their site. It says, the Hero Initiative creates a financial safety net for comic creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. And it's basically a lot of, you know, a lot of the older guys and the guys that have been in the industry for decades, they're getting on in years and they have a lot of health issues. And comic book, the industry doesn't, you know, it never exactly paid very well, and they never really had health insurance. A lot of these guys might have even been, you know, working as freelancers. So a lot of these guys never had health insurance, and I think it's a good idea, you know, as comic fans, these guys have given their, you know, their blood, sweat, and tears to us over the years, And a lot of them really changed my life. So I just thought it was a neat idea to give a little bit back. And I just wanted to throw that website out. It's heroinitiative.org if anyone's interested. It's a really good site. It's a great organization. They've been around for a number of years now.
Yeah, a lot of comics guys were freelancers, like you said. So they were just job-to-job guys. You know, they had to pay for their health insurance or whatever on the side.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and, you know, it's interesting in the times we live in now that you bring up something like this. With the government health care program being enacted, we're talking about guys who have, you know, for years on end been without these kinds of available benefits, you know. And I mean, some of these guys have gotten screwed out of their royalties for these characters they created.
Yes, absolutely. So it's not just health issues, but like it says in the site, an avenue back into paying work. A lot of these people are really, really struggling now, and just not with, like I said, not just with health issues, but with bills and their lifestyle right now, because they're not getting compensated maybe the way they should have been getting, and they're not getting royalties off things that they should be getting.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, as comic book consumers, it's almost in a way it's our responsibility to take care of these guys and try and do, you know, even if you can only do a little, do what you can. I mean, these guys have entertained us for years, and you know, what do they ask back for it? Nothing. They really don't ask us anything for it. So, you know, far be it from us to, you know, deny them this. Absolutely. I think it's a great thing you did today.
Yep. Yeah, it's
The thing, too, is back in the day, comic book artists, since there wasn't like 9,000 of them, they would have pretty much steady paying work for years because it was really a small little community of artists. You know, now the industry is really fickle, so you could have a job for a couple years, and then one day, like 10 years down the road, whatever, if Marvel or DC or whoever doesn't think that your style's outdated, and you're done, man. And then what do? You know, you spent your whole life becoming a comic book artist, and and that's all you know. And then what do? Burger King, you know? So it is a good thing that that they do that, you know, because a lot of guys don't have like college educations and stuff like that.
Right. It's a highly competitive industry these days. It really is, because it's so much easier for artists and writers and inkers and colorists to break into the field with the advent of all this digital technology. And social media, they can get their work out there so much easier. And a lot of these older guys are having trouble keeping up.
Not even older guys that maybe were in the started 20 years ago. Maybe they're like in their 40s and already they can't get work for Marvel and DC. I mean, you know, that's only like, you know, 10 years. Maybe you were in the business, and what do then? Yeah, it's you know,
right.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and even with a college education, I mean, let's face it, a guy who's been working in comic books for like 20 years plus, you know, even if he has like a degree in molecular bioengineering or something crazy like that.
I like your choice.
Who the hell's going to hire this guy, you know? I mean, you've been writing comic books for the last 20, 30 years, and now you want to be, you know, an engineer, you know.
Well, it happened to Herb Trimpe like 20 years ago. He was working for Marvel for all these years, and then one day they decided that his style was out there. Nobody wanted to give him work, and he at least had a teaching certificate, so he taught high school until he was able to retire. Now he's doing he does the convention circuit and makes money off commissions and stuff like that, you know, but they just threw him to the curb, you know, after being one of the pioneers of the Marvel, you know, from the late 60s of the Marvel universe or whatever, you know. So that happens a lot. Now, a lot of these guys, if they made a name for themselves, maybe they're not getting work from the comic book companies. They're doing commissions and they're making a lot of money doing that. But still, you have to pay for a house. You have to pay for your food. You have to pay for health insurance. You have to pay for all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Heroes Initiative is basically for guys that are just like they maybe guys that didn't make a big name in the business, you know, now they're hurt real bad, or they're really, I think Russ Heath, you know, who did all the war comics and was working in the 50s for Marvel, I think he might be getting helped by the Heroes Initiative too, because he's one of the pioneers from, you know, golden age era. So, yeah, that's stuff like that.
Well, yeah. What was the website one more time, Dallas?
Heroinitiative.org.
Very nice. So, very nice.
Yeah, I mean, at the convention, some of the artists, when they do their, they do sketches or they do prints, they sell them, they give donations to the Heroes Initiative. I know Frank Avila does. I'm sure some of the other guys do too.
That's right. Huge organization. There's a lot of people that are in the industry, that work in the industry, that are a part of it and participating in it too. It's really cool.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Beautiful.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do have something I want to talk about, but I don't want to take off all the time. So maybe I'll talk about it a little bit later. Al, you've been reading anything lately?
Yeah. Today I decided, Don had loaned me this like a few weeks ago, and I finally read the graphic novel by Will Eisner, The Dreamer. Excellent. It's one of the best things that I've ever read. It's basically his story about he got into comics, and you know, it ends with him, you know, getting the new spirit. But it's basically like about like 50 pages of his story and like how he was one of the pioneers. You know, I mean, he was there at the beginning. He got work like in the early days. Then he had his own, you know, all the artists that he hired. And basically, what he did was he set up a studio. And basically, he created characters for companies, and you know, and it became he was a businessman. But he started off with a dream, and he was able to make it into reality. And then, you know, it's a really uplifting story about how, you know, don't give up on your dreams and stuff like that. You know, you have the talent, the wherewithal, and you know, a little bit of luck, man. It you know, you can do it. You know, and he's definitely, you know, did it. And you know, now with this book, I mean, you know, Kirby's in this, you know, they use fictitious names, but on the back of the book they tell you exactly who they were.
Cat Jerby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, instead of Cat Ironwood or whatever. Yeah, and Jack King instead of Jack Kirby, and a few of Bob Kane, I think it was like Steve Korn or something like that, you know.
Bob Kane was Bill Finger.
I find it funny that they use code names through the book, but then yet tell you everybody's name at the end. I mean, you know, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of the code names?
Yeah.
What better guy than Will Eisner to tell a story like this, though? You know, I mean, he's just as much as Kirby the king of our medium.
Yeah. It's funny because at the beginning, he's working in a print shop, and this guy says, "Hey, listen, I know you're a talented artist. You've been taking a portfolio around town. I got some. You want to do some comics for me?" He goes, "Yeah, sure." You know, and he goes, "Yeah, they're in this style." And basically, what the guy wanted Eisner to do was these things they used to call Tijuana Bibles, which is what they took like a pop. You know what I'm talking about, right? They took
like what a Tijuana Bible is. Oh yeah,
I learned what they were from Watchmen when I was a kid.
Yeah, they took a Bible. They would take like a Popeye strip and make it dirty or whatever. And Eisner said no, and he lost his job because the printer was going to be printing them. So basically, Eisner was going to be doing them. The printer was going to be printing them, and then the publisher, which was just some dude, you know, some shady dude or whatever, was going to be distributing. So Eisner lost his job because he didn't take it because he didn't want to, you know, do that, you know, crap or whatever. And it paid off in the end. So it was a pretty damn good little graphic novel.
Good for him for not doing that. I mean, those Tijuana Bibles, why they were amusing. I mean. You know,
they're from the 30s.
I mean, I remember running across some in some stores over the years, man. And I mean, like the first time I saw one, I was like, "What the hell is this crap?" So, the guy at the store actually explained it to me. I was like, "Oh, okay, all right, that's a new one on me." So
nice.
Well, the Tijuana Bible was like the precursor back in the. Back in the 80s and early 90s, when a lot of comic book companies decided to do adult comics, like Fantagraphics had Arrow's comics, and I forgot who did Omaha the Cant Dancer. So they kind of went off, they kind of took that, but they were a little more, well, some of them were a little more serious, a lot, some of them were just goofy or whatever, but that was the roots of those, of that little phenomenon there of the, under the counter comic books back in that era.
That's hilarious.
That's when I was selling comic books, but we couldn't put them out. So, you know, people would just walk up to you at the end and go, you get any, adult kind, you got, yeah, here, you know.
Yeah, you got a box. Yeah.
Yeah, and they quickly grab them and pay you the money. And then, you know, it was like, it's like when you were a kid and going to get a Playboy or something, you know.
Man.
Well,
it's bizarre.
You know, it's cool. I love, obviously, anything Will Eisner. I think anyone that's a big fan of the medium would. I mean, he basically wrote the language, the modern language, sequential art, at least for the second half of the 20th century. You know, I mean, he's our guy. And I love his graphic novels, but I'm a sucker for his earlier works, you know, especially The Spirit. Like that.
Oh, The Spirit.
Oh, great. That comic, man. It just doesn't get any better than that.
It's funny because when I was a kid, one day I went to like, my dad took me to the, whatever, the drugstore, whatever, the newsstand to get comics. And so I find this thing called The Spirit. And I didn't know it was, I thought it was a new artist or whatever, even though I had bought one before years later, but I thought it was a new artist. So I'm like, take it to the car. And my dad looks at me and he looks at the book and he goes like, hey, I remember The Spirit. And, you know, I mean, I'm from Cuba. So my dad remembers The Spirit from Cuba. And he goes, yeah, I used to have like a spirit hat, you know, like the fedora or whatever they used to wear. And I'm like, man, he even got down there, you know, with the comic strip. He made a lot of money off that book. And he owned the character too. So that was one of the smarter things, him and Bob Kane, that they did, was they actually owned the, when the syndicate offered him, you know, the 16 page spirit section, one of the stipulations was he owned the character. So he was pretty smart.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, he was a smart businessman. It even says that in that book that you were reading.
Yeah, he's definitely a smart businessman, but he was fair to all his people. I mean, it talks about when he was leaving the studio, all the artists wanted to come along with him to do the spirit section. I guess because maybe there was more money too. But yeah, so I mean, he was good to his people. You know, a few of the artists, one artist in particular didn't come off looking real good. Bob Powell didn't come off looking real good in the story, but you know, I'll loan it to you, or Don will loan it to you maybe, and you can read it. It's pretty good.
Sweet. I like it. So, yep.
Sounds good. Sounds like a good read.
Yeah, it is.
Rookie Baby.
Comics history.
What have you been occupying yourself with, Ron?
That's a good way to put it, because I have not been reading comics.
Oh, shame on you.
No, I've been watching, well, I've been like overloading an anime right now. One particular, New Year's Eve, a couple friends of mine recommended the show, and then of course my kid says something about it, so I'm like, all right, we've got to watch this. So he and I sit down and we start watching it. It's called Attack on Titan, and I got to tell you, it's a great show. 25, 26 episodes in the first season, and the kid's actually like dancing around happy right now in front of me that I'm talking about this on the show. It's
What's
hilarious.
Up, Chris?
it's all English dubbed, or English subtitled. So, you know, you do have to read this one. It's not been translated yet. But it's fantastic. Possibly one of the best animes I have seen in years. The basic concept is that humanity has retreated behind these giant walls, and it's three different sections of wall. And of course, the closer in to the center of the civilization is, the richer you are.
Is winter
but there
coming?
Are these no, there are these giant 3 meter, 15 meter, you know, titans, and the only thing that a titan does is eats humans. That's its sole purpose, is to eat humanity, is to eat humans. That's it. So the show picks up about 100 years after humans have lost their war to the Titans and retreated behind these walls, and it's focused around this character Eren, but it focuses around a much larger cast of characters. It's really actually one of the largest cast of characters that I've ever seen in an anime. It's just an absolutely brilliant piece. It's really kind of hard for me to talk about it without ruining some of the really cool parts. So just imagine these guys are on these like almost Spider-Man-esque like flying rigs that like grappling hook their way through the cities, flying around killing these giant titans. you know.
Sounds pretty cool visually.
Yeah. It really, really a brilliant piece. One season, 25, 26 episodes so far, and I'm desperately awaiting word on a second season. I'm hearing right now sometime in April of this year.
Oh, so it's a pretty new show then.
Oh yeah, yeah. It just hit shores in America last year. So this is not an old show. This is something new. So,
well, you know, all Al and I talk about on the show is old stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I'm on the show, is to talk about new stuff. Exactly. Since you guys are all, you know, old and dusty.
This is probably the only episodes that anybody ever listens to are the ones that Ron's on.
Yeah. Right.
No, it sounds really cool though. So, your son's into it too, then?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, him and I, it's on Netflix as well.
Oh, it is.
So there you go. Pull up your Netflix, find your anime section, and watch Attack on Titan. It's on Netflix. We sat down, and over the course of the last couple weeks, we've been just watching them continuously. Whenever we get like 2-3 hours alone, you know, we're like, you know, we don't have to mow lawns or clean house or anything like that. The two of us will or sometimes even when we do have those things to do, we sit down and we watch this instead. So
nice.
But yeah, other than that, you know, I really need to get to the comic book shop and probably pick up like 2 or 3 issues of Walking Dead that are sitting there for me.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh wow, you haven't been in a couple of months, huh? Wow.
Well no, because they're pushing out like several issues a month right now for Walking Dead with this All Out War series they're doing. I actually think I only have like one issue sitting, so I have to go up to the store and find out. But it's you know, working out, trying to get healthy and everything is really kind of eating up all my time at the moment. So, not to mention all these dogs I've got running around this house.
Yeah, I was just going to say, every time I open up Facebook, there's pictures of you and more dogs. Well, which is, I think it's a great thing that you do, you and your wife, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fun. We've got two puppies right now from the rescue. One goes home on Thursday. And the other one is still waiting to be adopted.
Oh, nice.
But for anybody listening in the local Tampa Bay area, you can check us out at rugasrescue.com, I think. I'll double check
How
that.
Do you spell it?
But check. Rugas, R-U-G-A-Z, Rescue. We're located right here in Newport Richey. You can find us on Facebook. It is rugasrescue.com.
We will put a link, to on the show notes.
Appreciate. Cool. We're a pit bull based rescue group. Most of our dogs are all bully breeds of some kind or another, and you know, we work to try and find them the best possible homes available. So
nice.
Oh yeah, yeah. See, deep down inside, Rook's a good guy. You never would have known.
Nah, I'm really a dick, you know.
Well, look, on that note, let's take a quick music break and then we'll come back on and maybe talk about last night's episode of The Walking Dead.
Oof. All right.
All right, be right back.
I'm gonna get my own.
hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you want to hear our older episodes, you can find them at our blog on bunchofdorks.com. All right, and we're back. Okay, so before the music break, I teased that we were going to talk about last night's episode of Walking Dead. We'll keep this brief because I'm sure everyone's sick of us talking ad nauseum about the show and the comic. But so last night's episode was called Still, and it featured only two characters, and that was Daryl and Beth.
Yep.
So Rook, what did you think about it?
Fantastic episode. Yeah. You know, it finally showed a different side to the Daryl character. It kind of solidified the fact of why Beth survived and a lot of people didn't. I actually found it to kind of be a little bit of a refreshing episode, you know. It didn't go anywhere as far as distance or traction, but it went very far in character development, which is really more of what the book is about than anything else.
So I agree with you. Yeah.
You know, for a pair of characters that are not really in the book, Daryl not at all and Beth dies quickly, I found that to be one of the most true to the comic book concept episodes in a long time.
I think so too, and I like the episode too. And as much as the show seems to struggle to try to get a lot of character development in, and it's for me it's hit and miss, this episode had a lot of depth to it. I mean, believability in the characters. We already know, for the most part, the type of character Daryl is. And I don't think it was definitely a revelation to find out a little more about him, but I don't think it was a surprise to anyone. And that's just a testament to the writers, because it was a very natural progression for us to learn that kind of thing about him. And Beth, it seems like the character of Beth, they've been trying to just justify her place on the show and to just at least try and find a spot for her on the show and her character. And I think they're starting to hit the nail on the head, you know. It's starting to click. She's falling into place and she's starting to feel like a more important character to the show finally after what, two or three seasons here? I thought it was a great episode though. Definitely.
Yeah. Al, did you get to watch yesterday
I haven't watched it this year. Maybe, I mean, if I get in the mood, maybe I'll do a marathon at the end or whatever. But I haven't been doing it. I mean, you can spoil it for me. It doesn't matter, because who knows how this thing's going to turn out anyway, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think that's much of a spoiler anyway, you know? It's just two characters, and now you know they didn't die, at least not yet. So
not yet. You know, one day maybe, but not yet. But here's the thing that I did wanted to talk about. And I could be totally wrong on this, you know, because, you know, the connection between, you know, comic books and, you know, other mediums like TV and movies. And I was just wondering, because I haven't seen any, but then again, there's so many things being put out these days. Back in like the 80s and 90s or whatever, even before that, they used to be like, say there was a TV show like, I don't know, off the top of my head, say The Man from U.N.C.L.E. They would do a comic book of it. Now it's like kind of almost seems like the opposite. The show comes from the comic book. But do they still do, like, do you remember those Marvel Super Specials that used to come out where it's like when Star Wars comes out, they put out a comic book, or when Indiana Jones comes out, they put a comic book. When big movie comes out, do they still do that anymore? These
stuff like that, especially with like just for example, video games a lot of times will do a comic book prelude to this game, or you'll see Sons of Anarchy, for example, has their own comic that's filling in some of the blanks on some of the characters. Apparently, I found the first issue.
Oh,
to be out.
Okay, all right. Yeah, Sons of Anarchy came out before the comic book. Okay, all right.
I see a lot of comic book tie-ins, like you were saying, Rook, preludes and filling in this in the spots, but I don't see straight up adaptations anymore. I haven't seen one of those since probably the first X-Men film back in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Oh, that's like right. Yeah, no, I haven't seen one of those in a while, now that you mention it. So
yeah, I was wondering, because it seems like, I mean, unless I'm missing something.
No, actually, you know what, guys? Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones had a, I assume it's still running, Game of Thrones comic book was an adaptation of the book, which the TV show and the comic and the book, and but all of them stay very, 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 very true to the original source material. So there's one adaptation that I have seen that did not come until after the television series.
Yeah, you know, you talked about that on the show like probably a year or two ago also. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, I just got bored to read it because it's like, oh, hey, yeah, I already know all this.
Yeah,
yeah, because I was going through my books and I found a lot of these Marvel Super Specials. There was one of Krall and there was a Sheena, and then there was like the Indiana Jones and the Star Wars and the Flash Gordon and all that. And I'm like, you know, it used to be when like a big summer movie came out, Marvel and DC had an adaptation of it.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't see that much anymore, but I guess there's still like a little bit of a tie in here and there. But I'm wondering if it just flipped, if it's more like the comic book influences the TV show more so than.
I really think it is. I think a lot of it these days, you find that we'll take Wanted, for example, was a comic book first and then turned into a horrible movie. Surrogates, comic book first, then turned into a decent, halfway decent movie. You know, I think a lot of these concepts that they're coming out with in Hollywood, 300, you know.
Roads of Perdition. Roads of Perdition, Whiteout, 30 Days a Night.
30 Days a Night.
There's just a ton, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm interested to see is if we're going to get a comic book adaptation of 300 Rise of an Empire.
Flip-flopping. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, do the movie and then Frank Miller will come out and be like, oh, okay, you know what? That wasn't bad. Let me make that a comic book too. You know, is he even involved in the new movie?
His name's on it because I saw the credits and I saw Frank Miller in there. So his name's on it. So he's involved somewhere or another. Yeah. He embraces Hollywood like Alan Moore hates Hollywood and Frank Miller seems to embrace it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's funny how those two guys
a lot better work with Frank Miller's material than they did with Alan Moore. So I mean,
it maybe lends itself better, you know.
Speaking of Hollywood and comic books, check out this segue. MegaCon is coming to Orlando, Florida at the end of this month. I think it's like March 22nd, you were saying, Al? Something like that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It's that weekend.
Oh, and, please tell me it's not March 22nd.
I think it is.
Why, you can't go?
No, I absolutely could not go to that. That would be the same weekend as the local Chasco Parade, the festival that we all grew up going to. Pardon me as the puppy yells at me for picking it up.
The Dirty Mix having a breakfast party on one of those mornings.
Yeah, and it would also be the night of the V&V concert that I've been planning to go to for, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months now from when it was first announced.
I'll give you a pass because it's V&V Nation and that's pretty awesome. But Don, Al, and I are planning on going. So so folks out there, if you're in town or if you live near the Orlando area and you're thinking about traveling to MegaCon, you know, you should do it. It's always really fun. We usually go every single year. And if you want, get a hold of us, you know, contact us via our website, shoot us an email or something, or jump on our Facebook and maybe we can all meet up or something. We might even try and do a road episode. We did that a couple of years back.
I've been my Walkman.
it's going to be lo-fi, just like the first 75 episodes.
What's her face? Maggie's going to be there. Laurie Cohan's going to be there. I think somebody else too from Walking Dead is going to be there too.
Absolutely, that weekend. So 21st, 22nd, 23rd, March.
Yeah, okay. Well, once again, buddy.
And what I was told by somebody, but I couldn't find this person on the list, somebody was telling me that the guy who played back in the 60s and 70s was inside the Godzilla suit is going to be there. And that's interesting. But I didn't see him on the website, so I don't know where somebody got this information or whatever.
On your other podcast, he might know.
Yeah, I'll ask him. Yeah, but that's
he's
pretty
a
cool.
Huge Godzilla fan.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool to get the guy that was actually in the suit all those years. You know, it was like, oh, well, cool, man. You know, now that there's a new movie coming out, that I guess the Godzilla in the new movie looks more like Godzilla. I saw a picture. It looks a little bit more like...
That hype machine is really rolling, so I wouldn't be surprised if they had a lot of Godzilla stuff at MegaCon.
Oh, yeah. I love all those Japanese toys and stuff like that. Yeah.
So
I'd be I'd be very interested to see what the new Godzilla looks like. You know, it's
there's a picture on Yahoo of it.
I don't want to see it until I see the movie. I'm very interested, but I don't want to ruin it for myself.
Yeah, you don't want to spoil it. I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't look like the 1990 movie, it's you know.
Oh God! What's funny here, guys, is I'm actually looking at the MegaCon site, looking through who the guests are. James O'Barr. That's a pretty.
Oh,
sweet
the Crow. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. But what I find funny is I'm looking through many of these and I'm going, okay, met him, hangs out at Yancey Street, met him, met her. Well, I mean, it's got a pretty good guest list, but it's like I've met 90% of these guys at Yancey Street Free Comic Book Day, and several of them hang out at Yancey and shop there.
Nice.
So, I mean, like Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Greg Land.
Yeah.
You know, just three people that I see on regular basis.
Yeah, well, so. that's cake for them. Is they don't have to fly them in, you know? I mean,
yeah. Oh, well, Jimmy and Amanda are smart. They know they're going to make some money by going to this thing. So, you know.
Yeah, they got a new book out, so it's like, you know, promotion or whatever. Yeah, oh, yeah.
They're actually working on the new Harley Quinn, which is something I've been buying for my wife. So I unfortunately have not gotten a chance to read it myself, but it looks pretty damn sweet.
Well, so. why don't you get Mel on to do a review?
I'll try and do that. You know how she is, stage fright.
So do you guys mind if I talk about comic book binding for a minute?
Yeah, go for it.
So I got another book bound. It finally arrived in the mail. I put pictures up on Facebook, so you guys might have seen it, but I got a New Mutants book. The first 31 issues of the original New Mutants comic by Chris Claremont and Bob McLeod and Bill Sienkiewicz. I got them bound together in a big hardcover volume, just like my Promethea book. Looks beautiful. Cool. It's awesome. So it's got me thinking. I have some smaller runs that I wanted to get bound, but I don't want them. The hardcover binding, they only do a minimum of like an inch and a half or 2 inches, something like that, and then it has to be fatter. And some of my smaller runs aren't that small, aren't that big. So I wanted to maybe do like a paperback binding. So I looked at a couple of these companies that I had gone through, and none of them did that. So I was Googling for a while, and I figured out a way to bind my own books here at home. So I tried it, and I had my first successful attempt the other day, and I got about three more lined up. So,
okay, you say first successful attempt. How many failed attempts do I dare ask?
This is my first attempt, and it just happened to be successful. And when I
that's great. That's awesome. Okay,
successful is relative. It doesn't look 100% professional. I'm going to post a couple pics on the Facebook page and on the site, but I took Alan Moore, Xander Cannon, and Gene Ha did a 12-issue series back in the late 90s called Top 10. It was for America's Best Comics.
Oh, yes. Top 10. I have them.
Amazing. And yeah, I have I've got the entire run of single issues, and I'd love to have the collection. So I ended up here's what I did. I know, Al, you were asking me about this earlier, so I kind of wanted to explain my process. It's pretty bare bones. It's really easy to do. But I took the 12 issues. First, I needed a cover, so I just jumped on Photoshop. I Googled some really high-res images, and I just put together a neat-looking cover, spine, and back cover of the top 10 book that I wanted. What I did is I just went down to Office Depot. I had that printed up on really thick, glossy cardstock paper. It literally costed me, I think, like $1.50 to have it printed. So I have a cover for $1.50. So I bring it home. I took the staples out of each issue. Then ideally, if you had one of those tables with like the chopping blade to like chop off the ends of the pages to get them all even, that would be ideal, but I don't. So I use scissors and I just cut individual pages out, you know? So I took the pages, shuffled them and not shuffled, but I kind of lined them up so they were perfect. I put them between two big, heavy hardcover books, and I bought this glue. It's an Elmer's glue. It's a Kraft Bond glue, okay? And it's got to be acid-free. Otherwise, over time, it's going to ruin the pages. And I'll I'll post a picture of the glue if I think of it. The glue was like $2.50, I think. It was like less than $3. So I have all the pages after the staples are taken out, and I have them between two big, fat, heavy books, you know, so they're all mushed together. I take the glue and I just put a coat on the end of it, you know, where it's going to touch the inside of the spine. Mm-hmm. Leave it for a few minutes, and then I put another coat on. I ended up putting on like 3 or 4 coats. Then I took the cover that I had printed, I fold it up, put one more coat on that, press them together, and leave them for a little bit, and I'm done.
Wow.
Like, that's literally it. And it's holding together. I went through, I mean, I was pretty careful with it, but I was like kind of yanking on each page, you know, to see if there were loose pages or anything that didn't work. And it all seems secure and tight, and it's not falling apart or anything. So that's why I say it's successful.
But did you read it yet? Did you go through it and, you know, turn the pages and all that stuff?
Yeah. I sat down. I haven't literally reread the entire thing since I bound it, but I like held the spine and I opened it up, and all the pages are readable, you know, and you can get down pretty deep into the gutter. I was pretty happy. It looks pretty cool. So I've got, what do I got lined up? I got 3 more all cut up and ready. I'm going to bind Batman Year One.
Okay.
I got The Tale of One Bad Rat, which is by Brian Talbot, one of my favorites, and All-Star Superman, which is another one of my favorites. So
let me tell you something though, man. Batman Year One is a valuable book. I don't know if you want to tear that up.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about that.
Okay.
That right there is a true comic book reader.
Yeah, I could care about the money. It means a little more to me, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is, you could probably take those issues and sell them, and then get the trade paperback.
Yeah, I'm probably doing it the wrong way with a couple of these books. But overall, the process is really easy and it's fun, and I'm really excited about it, man. And it's cool having my own like editions that no one else does.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when we get together, you got to bring them in. I want to see how you did them. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll all meet up soon, and I want to bring them to show you guys, and, you know, see what you think about them. And I'll bring the glue.
So does the inside spine of the book where the glue is? Does it have like a thick coat of glue so the pages kind of bury into them or anything like that? Or
well, I got the glue that I got. It's actually rubber cement, and it's the kind that like when you take the cap off. Attached to the cap is like a little paintbrush thing.
So I brush it
on, so it's even strokes, and it's pretty thin, you know. So it's not all clumped up, but yeah, they press together and they hold really well.
Okay. Now, when you get the binding done professionally by that company in California, do they glue them or do they sew them?
I get mine glued. They do both. They do stitching or sewing too, but I always have it glued. And it's probably a similar but much more professional process of what, you know, what I just did with my top 10 book.
Okay.
But there's
when they do it, the pages are all even and all that stuff. And
yeah. Like I said, it's professional. So it actually looks like it's, you know, it's supposed to like it was released by a publisher.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hate to tell you, Dallas, but those paper cutters like you're referring to, they have them at like Office Depot and Staples, and you can use them without having to pay extra for it.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they do. That would make sense.
They always used to when we were printing flyers for the bands back in the day. Like we would print up like low rent flyers, black and whites, and do 4 ups, and we'd like run over to the cutter and we'd like chop them up real quick, and then like send a bunch of guys out like flyer in Ybor City with them.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah, you were big into that. I remember that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, they should have a paper cutter there for you to be able to do that with.
They most likely do. I'm sure things haven't changed. You know, I just I didn't look for one. I just went in and out. So, cool.
Now, can you do the same kind of binding without cutting the book up? Because I think you said something about that.
Well, that's what I'm going to try with. I've got The Tale of One Bad Rat is only 4 issues. So I'm going to keep them together and stapled, and I'm going to try and just glue the edges of the 4 issues into the spine of the cover that I'm going to make without taking the staples out, and I'm going to see how that works. So I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Put the pictures up. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, because
are you going to get another one professionally done, or are you going to wait around for a little while?
Yeah, I am. I've got one more in the can. I'm probably going to send it out within the next month. I'm doing a Nexus. I don't know. You guys remember that one?
Oh yeah.
Mike Baron and Steve Rude. It's an old superhero comic from the 80s. But I got the first 31 or 32 issues of that. And yeah, I'm going to be shipping that out to the same company that did my New Mutants and Promethea.
Oh, man. Nice. Yeah, that's a good hobby, you know, because it does kind of like keeps them out of the boxes and puts them on the bookshelf. And that's always better, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it puts them up there for people to see.
Yeah, eye candy, man. I love that because, Ron, you've got a really nice looking shelf in the back of your house. Well, I know you've been doing a lot of moving around, so I don't know if it's still there, but you got a nice shelf with all your books.
The shelves are all still here, you know, and you know, things are still displayed. Actually, we're going to be extending some of that because, you know, shelves are starting to overflow.
Heck yeah, they are.
Hey, you know, you mentioned Steve Rude. I did get something, but it's not really a reading book, but I saw it in the back of a comic book from a couple of years ago. He did a it's almost like a bound book, but it's a professionally bound book. It's like the title of it was How to Draw Nexus, but it's basically like the model sheets for all the characters and stuff, and then a few little like, you know, lessons or whatever. And it was like $15 on Amazon. I hadn't bought anything in a while, so I went out and got it, and it's great. If you love Steve Rude's art, it's beautiful because you see how all the character sheets that he does, like when animation, you know, you have the character from the front, the side, the back, the faces and all that. It's pretty sweet. So, yeah, but I mean, it's not something that you're going to read. But if you like to draw and maybe for like reference or whatever, you can't beat it, man.
That's awesome. I love Steve Rude's art. He's always been so fluid and clean. He's got a really nice, thick, clean line. And I love his style.
When he started back in the 80s, he was a throwback kind of to the 60s books, you know, so he was a little bit different than the other guys, and he was like into Kirby and he was into Toth, and you know, his style looked a little bit like animation too in a way. So oh yeah, he's the best, man.
Nice.
Well boys, I think this is about wraps it up, but does anybody else have any last thoughts, anything you want to throw in there?
No, I've talked about all the stuff that I read. So
Ron,
I promise I'll read more comics.
I like that. I think you should. You gotta take our slogan to heart, dude. And read more comics.
I know. I got some comics that I need to be reading, but you know, well, anime. Call him my name.
On that note, Rook's gonna go watch some more anime. He's gonna finish off his Titan show, and we will see everybody in about a week or so, hopefully. So until then, take care of yourselves and read.
More comics.
you know what we should try? I'll go read Algo's More and Rooko's Comics.
There you go.
Okay, let's try it again.
We won't even be able to get this together. Read
more
broccoli.
Son of a bye everybody. Bye.
See ya.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.